Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point.
Be a good time to get out. Shut up.
Holy s***.
Was that not the wrong building?
That's the wrong building. Holy s***.
That was from a video shot by a Marine cameraman with the 1st Battalion, 6th Marines in Afghanistan's Helmand Province in 2011. Lance Corporal Miles Lugosi's job was to record the glory moments for Marine recruiting videos. We filmed what the Marines wanted, he said, but then we kept shooting. And what he filmed wasn't the sanitized, celebratory moments usually fed to the American public. He captured a kind of personal ground truth of Americans at war in Afghanistan. The messy complexity, even the absurdity, of the longest war in United States history. So this hour on Point, an unvarnished view of Marines in Afghanistan. And you can join us. This new documentary, it's called Combat Obscura. Have you seen it? And if so, what do you make of it? Have you served in combat in Afghanistan? What are the American people never told about your experiences? And civilians, do you wish someone would explain to you the confusing, messy reality of Americans at war in Afghanistan or Iraq? Are you ready to watch a movie that does exactly that? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining us now from New York is former Marine Lance Corporal Miles Lugosi. He is director and producer of the new documentary, Combat Obscura. We have a link to the trailer at our website, onpointradio.org. Miles, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let me first ask you, as a Marine cameraman, a combat cameraman, when you deployed to Afghanistan in 2011, what was your specific mission?
Well, at that point, I think we were sort of supposed to be transitioning out of Afghanistan. We're still there, but that was supposed to be kind of the point where we were handing it over to the Afghan army. And so what my imagery was supposed to reflect was that transition, showing like Marines working with the Afghan army. Hearts and Minds stuff was always a big thing, you know, like handing out candy to kids and humanitarian stuff. If there were moments of you know, firefights and stuff, you'd have to sort of like, we'd have to send, you know, bleep out the curse words. You couldn't show Marines smoking cigarettes and stuff like that. So it was a weird job.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask, because the footage that you show in Combat Obscura is so raw, right? I mean, it's definitely moments that we almost never see in the, you know, that the American public never sees. So were there rules around sort of when and where you could keep shooting, or did they just say, like, shoot anything you want, but then send it to us, and us being, you know, obviously military leadership, and we'll figure out what we want to use? I don't know. Were you ever told when you had to turn your camera off?
No, because it wasn't really no one was really watching me. Like, my CO was so far away on a forward operating base, miles and miles away from where our operation was taking place, that a lot of the footage that I would try to get to him wouldn't actually make it there, because, you know, I'd be working out of, we were living in the Afghans' homes, like mud huts and stuff. So I'd be editing together propaganda videos and stuff in a mud hut, and then I'd have to like burn it to a disc, find a helicopter going back to the main base, and then if I was lucky, it would actually get there. And from there, they would kind of disseminate it. They would determine, you know, what would get released.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like they were actively monitoring me, saying, you know, don't. And also, like, combat camera guys aren't the only ones with cameras. All the soldiers have GoPros and stuff on their helmets and on their rifles. And so it's like everyone's kind of filming all the time.
Yeah. you know, you mentioned the hearts and minds stuff. There is a couple of scenes. One I'm thinking of in particular in Combat Obscura, which kind of like you see the hearts and minds stuff, right? That soccer game, where a group of Marines is playing sort of a celebratory soccer game with some Afghan locals, and there's a Marine sort of in the front, like right in front of your camera, explaining what's going on. How different was that from the day-to-day sort of more common experiences that you both had yourself and captured on film while you were in Afghanistan?
Yeah, I mean, that was like kind of the typical, you know, promotional video that we do. It was always about, because like the kids are you're always around kids. I mean, they're always coming up to you on patrol and stuff. And, you know, we, towards the end of the deployment, we had a soccer game with them. And it's funny, if you listen to what that captain is talking about, he's saying, you know, this kind of symbolically represents that we've made this area, you know, much safer now. And it was like, wait, but how does playing soccer with kids, you know, accurately reflect that? I mean, just a few days, actually, it's kind of sort of depressing, but after a few days after that soccer game, there was a suicide bomber that came in to one of the local schools that we had built and just blew it up and ended up killing a lot of people. So it was very easy to have those moments look how they look on camera, you know, Marines playing soccer with kids, but the reality of it was much different.
Yeah. So all the things that Americans usually do not see about the reality of what has been going on the ground in Afghanistan for 18 years now, much of that is in your film, is in Combat Obscura. And I want to play a scene here that actually features you. You're in front of the camera here because you got wounded in the head in one engagement. So I'm going to play this scene and then we'll hear you tell us a little bit more about it. But this is from Combat Obscura, and you're going to hear Miles Lugosi, the cinematographer from this documentary, being interviewed by a fellow Marine after a particularly vicious engagement they had.
So what happened to you today?
Yeah, I got shrapnel on my head. Just a boo-boo. I don't want any more combat. I think I'm good after this.
I'm ready to go home, aren't you?
Yeah.
I think anybody is today. How you feeling?
I'm scared. I'm not fine now, but when it was happening, I was like, what the f***, dude? I never thought they'd get that close. I never thought they'd hit us in the compound.
Where were you when that happened?
I was right outside by a truck. A sniper just missed me, hit the ground. I was like, holy shit. And then they hit us with a 30 mic exploded. I saw the guy that got hit, Hauser.
That's a scene from Combat Obscura, the new documentary from Marine combat cameraman Miles Lugosi. Miles, can you tell
us? A lot of bleeps.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what you, I mean, when I said that we get to see the unvarnished truth about what you and your fellow Marines experienced, that's part of it. So, I mean, what happened there?
I mean, like, we woke up around 5 a.m., I think, and we were getting rocket. They were shooting RPGs at us and mortars and grenade launchers. And it was really confusing because we couldn't figure out where exactly we were getting, where they were shooting from, because we couldn't see them. Which is like 95% of the time you don't know what's going on. Like, you can't see who's shooting at you. They're shooting from so far away that, you know, you're just kind of, you start shooting at wherever someone else starts opening up first. That's kind of where everyone starts to follow. So it lasted for a long time like that until finally four guys were wounded, hit by 30mm grenades that they were shooting out of a grenade launcher. And yeah, I kind of, you see that clip later on in CNN. It got a lot of different outlets and stuff. But the guy that I interviewed for that video then interviewed me afterwards, and that I never kind of showed that before.
Well, especially the part where he asks you, you're ready to go home, right? Just be anybody USA. And you say, yeah. And then he says, how are you feeling? And you say, after a really long pause, you say, scared. So, I mean, I wonder, what are you trying to say with Combat Obscura, with this documentary? What are you trying to show us?
I think what we want to show, we want to keep the film, I mean, it's a very tough film to watch, and there's no narrative, and there's not a real, like, coherent message, but we wanted to keep it really messy. We wanted to show a lot of the paradoxes that you see at war, because it's like, right after that scene, you know, I'm saying, I'm really scared, and then you get into this whole, there's a whole, like, montage of bravado, these guys saying, you know, firefights are better than sex, you know, guys getting shot in their tattoos, and, like, showing that off and stuff, and, you know, like, acting out for the camera. So it kind of bounces. It bounces back and forth between these different, you know, themes and stuff. And really, I think we just want people to come away with the actual, you know, feeling of war, because it's not a story. War doesn't really have a story. It's a lot of highs and lows, and it's ups and downs, and boredom, excitement, utter fear and terror, and yeah, we want to just capture all of it.
Well, Miles Lugosi is the former Marine combat cameraman and cinematographer and director of the new documentary Combat Obscura. We're going to talk a lot more about what's in the movie when we come back, but we want to hear from you. Did you serve in Afghanistan or Iraq? Do you think the American people have a sense about what life was really like for you on the ground there, what your experiences were really like, the confusion, the complexity, the messiness, even the absurdity of war? We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken? Podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Miles Lugosi. He's the cinematographer, director, and producer of the new documentary Combat Obscura. He's a former Lance Corporal in the Marine Corps. He spent 8 months in Afghanistan's Helmand Province as a Marine Corps combat photographer. He was assigned to the 1st Battalion, 6th Marines. That was in 2011. And the footage that he brought back from Afghanistan is what makes up this new documentary, Combat Obscura. And Miles, I want to play another scene here from the movie. This one is just so revealing about the truth and honesty that some of the Marines look upon themselves and their colleagues in the unit that you were filming. So in this scene, it's after dark, and several Marines are sort of holed up in their blast shelter, and They're smoking local hashish, which I imagine they could get in trouble for if found out. But one of the Marines says, luckily, Afghanistan is a hash farm. And then, looking pretty relaxed, he tells your fellow cameraman, Justin Loya, what he's learned about the Marines once he became one.
To be quite frank with you, Mr. Loya, you know, you join the Marine Corps, you think the Marine Corps is like a bunch of perfect people, you know?
Yeah.
Don't do anything bad, don't curse, and they're just really squirt away killers, you know? And the Marine Corps is filled up with the most f***ed up individuals I've ever met. And, you know, just like me, you know?
A scene from Combat Obscura. Miles, help us understand why this particular Marine was saying what he said.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of Americans have this perception of the military as like these kids that just want to go serve their country and, you know, fight for freedom and all that. But a lot of the time, it's kids who are looking to kind of find themselves and to... They're looking for something that they haven't been able to find, say, like, by going to college or getting a job. And, you know, there's a lot of kind of crazy kids in the Marine Corps. There's a lot of really rough guys that, you know, some of them have criminal record. Like, when we enlisted in 2008, most of the guys that are in the film, that was Obama's troop surge. So they were pretty much taking anyone who was willing to go because they just needed bodies in Afghanistan. So you were getting a lot of wild guys that, you know, maybe wouldn't have found something else in another direction of life. But yeah, I think that moment kind of pretty accurately sums up how a lot of actual Marines feel about, you know, the Marine Corps.
There's quite a few scenes in the movie where they're smoking that local hashish. I mean, did you worry about when putting that out, all out there that, you know, people might be pretty critical of that?
I mean, I think it's okay to be critical of it. I think surprisingly, you know, people put war and like the experience of war on such a pedestal that you kind of get away with anything because you can say, well, they're in war and war is hell and it makes you do crazy things. But, you know, we want to kind of challenge that and show, you know, these kids made the choice to enlist. I made the choice to enlist. And it's okay to be critical of some of the things that we were doing out there. But I think being honest is the most important aspect.
Yeah. Now, this next question might sound like such a question from a civilian. But when I saw all this, I thought, I mean, getting high in a war zone where clearly there's so much danger, and you're right in the middle of it. It just didn't seem like a very smart, a very wise thing to do. But I understand that at least one of your fellow Marines said that they decided to get high on purpose to like that there was actually an advantage to being somewhat paranoid after smoking the hashish.
Yeah, I mean, you get. There's like a lot of different reasons for it. I think, you know, obviously one is like boredom or you know missing home and having an aspect of home being in this weird place that you're in. But another aspect is like, you know, you're in war and you've talked to past Marines that have gone to war. Have you seen movies where, like, you know, Full Metal Jacket or Platoon, where you know this was a huge aspect of wars like Vietnam where guys were doing heroin and shotgunning marijuana and stuff. And I think you kind of want to live up to that expectation at the same time. You know, like, you want to be that salty Marine that's out there that can get high in a war zone and not be afraid and still go about their daily activity. And I mean, I know some guys that would smoke weed before getting into a firefight, you know, just to have that, like, extra, I don't know, adrenaline. But yeah, these kids are very young, you know, they're like kids that you knew in high school. They're not superhumans. So they, if you were that young and you're out there, it's kind of, it's also like kind of the giddiness of the whole experience, you know, being in war for the first time and everything.
So I really appreciated that you just pointed out that many of the men in the film are very young. And yet, by virtue of them being Marines, they've been thrown into some incredibly complicated, complex, and unclear situations that they have to somehow manage their way through, you know, while also being at war and representing the United States of America. So I just want to play a couple of clips here that sort of represent a scene where the complexity of all that just is really in your face, and that we're asking, again, young people to handle this. So there's a scene where Marines get word that there's a high-value individual, meaning a potential member of the Taliban, who might be in a mosque during Friday prayers. And in this scene, you're going to hear a squad leader and a translator. And the translator warns the Marines that the local people won't like being ordered out of the mosque, out of their prayer service, to be searched.
So all the people gather in the mosque, so okay. It would be not good to call them.
You know why we're here, right? It's because there's a very high-value individual here. I don't care right now about their customs or their courtesies. I want every single man that is here, I want them out here. Hey, bud.
No. Do it.
Hey, if every man does not come out, we're going to go in and pull every single
man
out.
So they pull all the men out of the mosque here, but the raid over the course of, it seems like a couple of hours because it goes into the evening, Miles, it doesn't turn up that high-value individual, that Taliban target, or the guy got away. It's not clear. So the squad leader, he rounds up his men to review the operation, and he orders them to let all the people that they had pulled out of the mosque, just let them go.
Overall patrol didn't go as planned, as everybody knows. I'm not going to beat a dead horse. We sat there, we got the cordon, we had suspicious individuals, looked like a Taliban meeting. For the rest of my deployment stay was. We can't control that. Whatever. Good job overall, and that's all I got.
So all those guys are
All those guys are free to go. Every one of them.
Are they pissed?
I would be pissed.
You know, Miles, this scene is long. It's a long scene, and I really appreciate that you spent so much time on it, because one of the things I came away with was, you know, in that first clip, we hear a Marine being very forceful, not really showing much cultural sensitivity or empathy for the moment, just, you know, issuing commands. But then later on, we hear a pretty empathetic take, like, yeah, I would be really mad too if this had happened to me. I mean, that swing was really dramatic. Is that the kind of sort of moral and emotional pendulum that all your fellow Marines were sort of riding on all the time?
Yeah, I mean, and you see the way that they kind of, he asks, are they pissed? But it's sort of like a sardonic, kind of laughing sardonically about it, because there's such a moral pendulum, like you said, that you kind of have to desensitize, you know, everything. And it's like, we got the intelligence. I mean, intelligence is so unreliable, you know. You have no idea where it's coming from, but someone over the radio says, oh, there's some guy in a house over here. Go, go, go. And you have that. You're expecting literally to get there and to be literally face-to-face with the Taliban. And which, you know, never happens. You never see them. So it's like you have all this adrenaline that's pumping through, and you get there and it's just a bunch of dudes kind of, you know, praying or just hanging out, and there's no weapons and there's nothing. So it's like, it's very complicated. And the people, like you said, there's a total cultural barrier. Like even your translators that are working with you, the Afghan translators, they're not from that area. Like, they're from a whole other region of Afghanistan. So it's like, take like a someone from the city and put them in the Appalachian, you know, backwoods. There's still going to be that disconnect with the people that are supposed to be, you know, kind of erasing that culture barrier, that language barrier.
Yeah.
Well, or at least minimizing it.
We're going to talk with with a team leader in the squadron where you were serving here in just a minute, but we got a lot of callers, so I want to at least go to one of them, Miles. So hang in here. Let's go to Jeff, who's calling from Berlin, Connecticut. Jeff, you're on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Yes, I was calling because I heard the question about whether or not civilians understand what it's like to be at war, and I agree that they don't. And hearing your interview with a guy talking about being truthful and honest about what we actually do over there is the only way to help kind of get it understood that it's not like the movies, and we don't have to live up to that.
Yeah. Jeff, let me just ask you, do you think it's important for people to know that truth?
Yes, I do. I just overheard you speaking about the information or intel telling us that there'd be somebody there and everybody's amped up and ready to get there. And when you arrive there, there's nothing there. And then on your way home, you get some pop shots and someone shoots at you and blows you up. And then they run and hide and you're still left with just nothing. And it's not as exciting as the movies make it out to be.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for your call. I want to bring into the conversation now Ian Pollock. He's joining us from Cincinnati, Ohio. He served as a Marine from 2008 to 2012, retiring as a corporal. He was a team leader in the squadron where Miles Lugosi was a cameraman. Today, he works in data management with a pharmaceutical research firm. Ian Pollock, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So first of all, Ian, I should say that even though you were a team leader in the same squadron where Miles was serving, I don't recall actually seeing, we don't see you in the film, is that right?
That is correct. I am not in the film, but many of my friends are.
Okay, now is it because did you not want to be interviewed by Miles, or did you ask him to not put you in the movie? I'm just curious why.
I can't recall if Miles ever asked me for a specific interview, but had he asked me, I probably still would have declined.
Okay. So what was it like for you to see your experiences and your fellow Marines' experiences put together in this new film? What did you think of it?
It's really complex. And it's obviously, I think I should preface this by saying that I think this film is very important. To Jeff's point, but also to what you and Miles have been speaking to already, which is showing the reality of combat. I think one of my biggest takeaways was how stressed I got the first time I viewed it, because it kind of takes you back to a certain place and a time in your life that was very kind of transformative, kind of dealing with the stressors and the kind of day-to-day pressure that being in that sort of environment puts on you and kind of bring you back to the sights and the sounds and the people that you used to know at that time.
Hmm. Well, I want to actually play a scene, Ian and Miles, if I can, because it's one that actually left me and my producer, Steph Katsonis, with a bunch of questions here. So let's play it. And in the scene, you see the Marines approaching a body. They've shot a man, and they go to examine the body, and they start to worry. And a squad leader calls for the Afghan National Army, or the ANA, to come take care of the body. Now, Ian, I understand you weren't there and don't know all the details, but let's listen to what happened, because the Marines do start getting quite worried, and here's what they do.
He didn't have a gun on, did he?
God damn it.
No, he didn't.
Hey, buddy. How are you doing today?
He's just trying to get
look
in
like
shot.
He just got...
Right in the hand, dude.
Right in the hand.
Hey, Roger,
that 1-1. Ooh, through and through.
Yeah, next one.
Yep, he lived for a little while.
This is a shop?
Yeah.
Oh, man, we killed the shopkeeper.
What are they talking about?
Just want to get rid of the body and hide it.
Who is?
ANA. This is no good for people to see.
Yeah.
That's a scene from Combat Obscura. Miles, let me first turn to you, because what we as viewers see in this scene is evidence that the Marines had shot what seems to be an innocent shopkeeper. And they say, we got to get rid of the body and hide it. The ANA is going to do it. This is no good for people to see. I mean, what happened here?
Well, I think we came upon the body after a squad of Marine snipers had shot him. And basically what they thought he was doing was spotting for the Taliban, which means they thought he had a radio and was spying on our patrol and then relaying our position to the Taliban. And when we got there, you know, he didn't have a radio, he didn't have a weapon, he didn't have anything. And this, I mean, didn't happen a lot, but, you know, occasionally, you know, this, it does happen. And, yeah, it was, it's tough because you're filming it and you with the camera, you have that disconnect from it. But you see that the guys kind of have to have a disconnect to it as well. Almost like it's just collateral, you know, it's this, you know, dead human is not fully human. You have to kind of, you know, dehumanized in that sense, and you get that impression from the way that they react to it. As far as like hiding the body, I think that was the ANA's. That was the Afghan Army's decision. They were obviously concerned about, you know, the locals seeing what we had done, and really, it was a tough moment. But you have to go on with the patrol, and that was like, you know.
Yeah.
It's another day.
I have to be honest. I mean, this scene makes it seem like the Marines are being very kind of cold and arbitrary about it. But Ian Pollack, I mean, we're also, as viewers, we're just kind of like dropped into the middle of it. Is there more context around how these moments were handled?
Well, this and like many other moments, there is several parts of this movie that does have some context removed, which I think would it definitely changes a bit of the storyline or the scope, at least, of the film. But in this particular circumstance, I'm friends with the person who took the shot, actually. I think you can look at this in a couple different ways, but I think primarily this was something that was approved by the battalion, which is very hard to do, especially given that most of what a Marine's job in Afghanistan was as a patrolling infantryman is to wait to get shot at and then react accordingly. So to get approval to shoot somebody is obviously, one, it's a very heavy decision, but also it bears significance in at least, you know, there was some thought that this person was well-connected enough to be a high-valued individual.
Yeah. Well, Ian Pollack and Miles Lugosi, stand by here for just a second. We got to take a really quick break. We're talking about the new documentary, Combat Obscura, and the truth about experiences of United States Marines in Afghanistan. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the new documentary, Combat Obscura. It shows a really unvarnished view of the experience of United States Marines in Afghanistan. Miles Lugosi joins us. He is the cinematographer, director, and producer of the new documentary, former Lance Corporal. He spent 8 months in Afghanistan in Helmand Province, assigned to the 1st Battalion, 6th Marines. Ian Pollack is also with us. He was a team leader in that same squadron, and he served as a Marine from 2008 to 2012. He retired as a corporal. And here's a scene from Combat Obscura, and you'll hear Miles Lugosi asking a fellow Marine what he thinks about the Afghan people he sees on the streets and those he sees through the sight of his gun.
What do you think?
I need EOD.
About these guys?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm jaded. I think these guys are always just hanging out. I don't think they're bad guys, but when we kill them, we see the same dudes in the same clothes, so who knows?
This is a scene from Combat Obscura. Miles Lugosi, before the break, Ian was saying that we were talking about a scene where a shopkeeper got shot, and that in truth, you know, the decision to take the shot came from higher up the chain of command. It wasn't just an arbitrary accidental thing that happened. But we don't know that as viewers, because we don't see that sort of decision-making process in the movie. And that might have been, I think Ian's getting to the point where he was saying it's kind of unfair to the Marines in the movie. So tell us about why you chose to do it that way.
Well, I mean, without the context, like, we didn't have any context when we got to the body. We had no idea why this guy was shot. And even afterwards, it wasn't totally clear why they, I mean, to get a shot approved, you're right, it has to go through a lot of different chains of command. But those people aren't there seeing the guy. They're listening to what the guys on the ground are telling them. And so I think, look, you get the context from the Marines' perspective, but that then you're excluding the context of the Afghans' perspective. So whose narrative is kind of getting told there, I think, is important. And so I think it's a tough decision, absolutely, to strip it of context. But to me, it more accurately, or at least hopefully more accurately, reflects the actual, like, combat in real time as it's happening, you know, at least for the audience, to not have that reflection or that hindsight of what, you know, actually happened. Because I still, to this day, don't really know what happened. Mm. And in that moment, you're not really sure either.
Right. Well, Ian, what do you think about that?
I think it's fair. I guess it's such a complicated thing, and I guess the perspective of the film kind of wants that. But I think it's also doing due diligence, as this is a film about Marines, and more so than it is about the Afghan people. I mean, there are some examples of Afghan locals in the film, but I mean, most of this seems to be kind of picking apart and parsing the experience of the Marine that's in combat. And I think his scene does do credit to that, and where you can just kind of find yourself in the middle of a chaotic situation that you didn't really expect at any given turn, at any given day.
Hmm. Well, let's go to the callers again. Let's go to Jeremy, who's calling from Dallas, Georgia. Jeremy, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. Go ahead.
Just first off, wanted to say thank you for service these two gentlemen did. That was very awesome, and thank you for going downrange. In regards to the question for civilians understanding combat, there's so much I could say. I spent 20 years in the Navy. I did combat for maritime, and I did some downrange time in Afghanistan. Again, there's so much I could say, but it's important for civilians to know that when we come back from some traumatic events like that, that we, as military, it takes a long time for us to cope and to really get back into our quote civilian life, unquote, get back into our civilian clothes, because we were in a uniform for so long and in our combat boots, carrying a full metal jacket, you know, here, so to say. But especially on 4th of July, it's hard for me, and I know for probably these two jarheads. sometimes of the year, it's rough. PTSD is real.
Yeah.
And just wanted to put that out there. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for calling. Ian, let me just ask you, I'm wondering, coming back from your tours in Afghanistan, was that tough for you?
Sure. Yeah, it was. I mean, you did one of the most extreme things that a human being could possibly do, and you did it before your brain was really fully developed and able to sort of contextualize and gain the perspective that you might need eventually. And I think that's why a lot of people suffer, myself included.
Yeah. Well, let's take another call. Let's go to Kevin, who's calling from Chesapeake, Virginia. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm a generation that saw the footage from Vietnam was really brutal, shot by combat camera and news media. And I'm wondering if the directors and stuff there, they feel it has, I can't recall footage from Afghanistan or Iraq having the impact of some of the film that I think many of us, the pictures are seared in our memory.
Yeah.
Well, maybe like My Lai and stuff like that, but even other film. But so I'm wondering, does he feel that has the Pentagon gotten better about controlling its image about what comes out and somewhat sanitized the wars?
Right. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for your call and question. Miles Lugosi, let me turn that to you. I mean, I would say that the Pentagon got very good at it in the first Iraq war.
Gulf War was kind of the changing moment, because they saw what happened, you know, during Vietnam. All the coverage, all the news coverage had such an impact on public opinion, which, you know, in turn kind of helped to end the war. And so I think after Vietnam, they clamped down a lot harder. You saw that in the Gulf War. There was, like, no footage coming except, you know, it was, like, night vision aerial shots of targets getting bombed, and you couldn't see any humans. You couldn't see any. It was very, like, disconnected. And they loosened up during Iraq and Afghanistan, and you saw a lot more reporters. But the embed system, the embedded journalists system, has gotten kind of weird. I think I was a Marine, obviously, so I have no experience with that. But I think there's a lot of kind of hoops that you have to jump through to get out there. But this film, I would hope, is different from that, because even as an embedded, like, reporter, civilian journalist, there's still that barrier. You're looking through the lens of a civilian. The Marines and the soldiers themselves are going to act differently, you mm-hmm. know, because that's going out for public consumption. It's their public image. You know, they're representing kind of the institution of the Marine Corps. Whereas if it's just a Marine with a camera, they're more just representing themselves and how they want to be seen, you know, amongst each other.
Yeah. You know, I want to ask you both a particular question here, and I'm going to muddle through it here, so forgive me in advance, because it's very specific to Afghanistan and the war in Afghanistan, because we're in year 18 now. It's the longest war in United States history. And one of the things that I kind of came away with in watching Combat Obscura is, sure, I mean, we see some pretty wild behavior from Marines. We see what might come off as kind of like cold and not culturally sensitive behavior. Like a really superficial thing to do would be to be quite critical of some of what we see in the movie. But the feeling that I actually had, Miles and Ian, I came away with this sense of incredible sorrow. Not just for the Marines, whose lives we see, but for the Afghan people as well, because it just seems so absurd, right? Like the things that you were being asked to do and asked to accomplish, maybe because we don't see the strategists, we don't see higher up the chain of command, we don't see the politicians saying, here's the goal. We just see literally the dusty, dirty, on-the-ground reality. It just seemed like there's no way that the mission could succeed. And here we are in year 18. I mean, is it, Ian, is that anywhere near what you felt while you were serving?
Yeah, absolutely, especially there. And when you get there, you first arrive and you're very gung-ho about, you know, this kind of mission statement that you have. And you're, you know, I was myself a part of five kind of helo invasion assaults on cities, different cities in Afghanistan, just from over my two deployments. But you go from this point of being like very mission driven and utterly focused to, by the end of it, you're kind of confused as to what you're doing there. And really what the mission turns into is one of self-preservation. You're just trying to make sure that none of your friends, no more of your friends, get hurt.
And Miles,
it definitely calls sorrow to mind.
Miles, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely what we wanted to kind of, I'm glad that you came away with that, you know, and what we don't want is people just digging further into whatever band camp they're in, you know, anti-military, anti-war, pro-war, you know, pro-troops, et cetera. We want you to come away with just the general absurdity of this, of America, like you said, America's longest war. And, you know, that area that we were in is now, you know, the Taliban has taken it back. And the Afghan army is still out there. They've lost more troops. They've lost more soldiers in the past 2 years than we have the entire time we were there. So they're up to like Vietnam numbers of casualties, and they're just getting absolutely wiped out by the Taliban. And after a certain point, you have to wonder, what was the end goal of this whole war, and what were we hoping to do, and was that even remotely possible? And now, where do we go from there? From here, I mean.
Miles and Ian, I mean, what was the end goal? It's such a good question, because right now the United States is negotiating with the very people that in 2011, when you were serving in Afghanistan, that you were tasked with rooting out, right? I mean, we're negotiating with the Taliban. I'm just wondering, Ian, what do you think about that? How does that, when you reflect on your service, what do you think about that?
I understand that enemies can form treaties. And we've we've been at odds with the Taliban for a very long time, and obviously it's very stressful because, you know, I've lost friends there. I have friends that have lost parts of themselves and left parts of themselves over there. And it's not something that, you know, they'll most likely ever get to see again. And now that we've spent all these years kind of fighting this kind of amorphous, ambiguous enemy, we're coming to the table. But, you know, something has to change, obviously, because we've really accomplished quite a great deal, and then we gave it all away. So I don't know what's next.
Well, Ian, since you mentioned losing friends there, there are a series of scenes in Combat Obscura, which I'm pretty sure most Americans will have never seen from what the reality in Afghanistan is. And that is, you know, we see a mortally wounded Marine. So I want to play a little bit of it. And in this scene, there's the units trying to target, a perceived enemy. And 21-year-old Lance Corporal Jacob Levy climbs up on a mud brick parapet to really get a good look at those enemy positions. And someone warns him, don't get shot. But Levy does get shot in the head, and here's what happens.
Levy, don't get shot. Hey, I'm looking around buildings three, buildings two.
Was that you?
Yeah.
Hey, where's Hardy at?
He went that way.
Hardy! Wait one, break. Hardy. Brown.
Stop!
Cornbread!
Shot to the head, left side of the head, toward rear of the head. How about you?
Hey, somebody carry my weapon.
Hey, keep those fires coming. I got two people with weapons up the road.
Hey, got this.
Hey, watch.
Marty, low crawl back over here.
Get down.
You okay?
Doc's right here, baby.
Go ahead.
Hey. Doc's right here, man. We're helping you out. We got you.
Victims, gunshot to the head.
Okay, buddy.
Through and through. Body locking up.
That's a scene from Combat Obscura where you hear how Marines are reacting to the fact that Lance Corporal Jacob Levy got shot in the head. They do medevac him out, but Lance Corporal Levy died a couple of days after this. Miles Lugosi, why did you want to put this very difficult truth in the movie?
It was a really tough decision. You know, I felt pretty guilty just for having filmed it. And you see that in the, I mean, like, it's like, how do you film that, and then show it without exploiting, you know, this guy that died later. And, I spoke with his mom, Amanda Jacobs, and, she was actually, it surprised me because she was actually very proud. She wanted it to be shown. She wanted people to appreciate what, you know, the reality, not just the reality of war, but what he had gone through, and to get that accurate, you know, perspective. But yeah, obviously a very difficult thing. You don't see it a lot, like you said, in war documentaries. You see it on weird, you know, war porn sites on YouTube and stuff. You'll see this kind of stuff. But to include it in a feature documentary, I think, is pretty rare. But we wanted to show how long it was as well, you know, getting him, trying to get him medevaced, and the, you know, the helicopter just keeps coming down and then taking back off, and he's losing blood, and it's just the physical, not just like the mental toll, but the physical toll of combat you can see.
Yeah. Well, I think you very bravely show this scene in the movie, and as well, as we were talking about earlier, a scene where an innocent Afghani shopkeeper is also killed. So just two moments in a complex war that's America's longest war now in its 18th year. Well, Miles Lugosi, cinematographer, director, and producer of Combat Obscura, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
And Ian Pollock served in the Marines from 2008 to 2012. He was a team leader in the squadron where Miles Lugosi was a cameraman. Ian Pollock, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Folks, go to onpointradio.org where we have a link to the trailer for Combat Obscura. It's definitely worth watching. Again, that's onpointradio.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.